to VOA's International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Coming up, Orlando shooting victims are gathering in their grief.
There was just crying. Everyone was crying. There were a few family members that had either fainted or come close to fainting.
An analyst speaks with us about a possible motive for the worst mass murder in U.S. history. What is the government doing to block terrorism? And we'll look at whether there is a link between gun violence and mental illness. It's all today's edition of International Edition. ...50 dead, more than 50 others wounded in the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. A 29-year-old security guard of Afghan parents, armed with an assault rifle and a handgun, attacked randomly in the crowded Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida. Some patrons initially thought the popping gunfire was part of the music. Chris Hansen was there, and VOA Today Show's Matt Lauer asked when he knew the situation was not normal.
When you hear, after a couple of shots, you just hear the bang, 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 bang. It's like, okay, this isn't a song. This is reality. And you hear the screaming and you see the blood. The guy next to me falls over, and that's when I'm like, oh, look behind me. And you see those in the VIP area going down. You see other people going down. And that's when I go down. And I'm just like, I got to crawl out of here. I got to get out of here somehow. Because I wasn't running. There was no way. If people were standing and I'm not going to be a moving target, that I was crawling out. So I dropped and I crawled till I got to the cement of the patio. And
you
got
actually, as you were crawling, from what I understand, there were people tripping over you, stepping on you, trying to get to the door.
To the back door, back the area, and the privacy fence was knocked over, and everybody was just scrambling out.
Families of the Orlando shooting victims were asked by the Orlando police to meet earlier today at a senior center to get more information on the case, including an updated list of names of the victims. On hand was reporter Ramon Taylor, who joins us on the line. Welcome, Ramon.
Thanks, Susan.
Please share with us what happened at this meeting.
Well, this morning, families were asked to gather at 10 a.m., in order to hear the remaining news for those families that had not been yet notified of the victims, the remaining victims of the 49 that at that point had not been announced. Again, this morning, only about a dozen or so were remaining to hear some sort of news, ultimately, most likely, very grim news. But it was one of those moments where families needed to hear it. They arrived early in order to try to get that information and had to wait very for a few hours in order to finally hear what was ultimately just a horrible, horrible fate.
And what about the people in the hospital? Have you heard anything about them?
Well, we did speak with one family member of a survivor who described the situation inside that hospital. It's just as hard as it is to hear of the families of those that have not made it, to hear from the families of those that have suffered tremendous injury, both physical and in so many other mental ways, it's heartbreaking. And what they've told us is that there was just crying. Everyone was crying. There were a few family members that had either fainted or come close to fainting. So it's that type of atmosphere for again the families of those that did survive, for health workers inside that hospital. It's certainly just a very sad place to be.
Is there anything being done to support these families at this difficult time?
Well, we have seen an outpouring of support from local organizations, including Chick-fil-A, other national chains actually, which have come by to this family center earlier this morning. They were coming by with food, with drinks, with goodie bags. So, in that sense, yes, they're providing what they can. You know, it's only a small sense of comfort what they can provide at this point. But the real outpouring of support has come from the local residents of Orlando who have come out in droves around blocks in order to try to donate blood. It's one of those things where it's even more heartbreaking to know that the way that this American society works with donating blood, the gay community cannot donate. And so you've just seen people come out in huge numbers in support of the LGBT community, of all the victims of that night. And that's one thing that has been just warming to see.
Well, thank you very much, Ramon, for reporting to us today from Orlando.
Thank you, Susan.
Joining us now here in the studio is our social media reporter, Andrew Palchevsky. He's been watching the web and what's going on today concerning this story. And what do you have, Andrew?
I've been watching it all through the weekend, and what we've kind of seen are these kind of dual sentiments. There's, of course, the sadness, and you know, I don't need to tell you all the words that people are using on social media, because I'm sure you can imagine them: horrific, tragedy, unthinkable, all of these terms that are being used to describe this. And really, many people on social media just can't really wrap their heads around this, how this could happen to people. As we were just saying before we went on air, millions of people across the country every weekend are out at, you know, bars, whether they're gay, straight, out at just having a good time, and then someone comes in and does this. So we're seeing a lot of that sadness, but we're also seeing out of this a lot of resilience and support. Also, as we were talking before we went on air, talking about the blood drives, a lot of people taking those pictures on social media, sending out that information on where people can give blood, and lines around the block in Orlando of people lining up to donate blood. Someone went on a website called GoFundMe, which raises funds for people, and they've raised over $1.3 million so far for the victims' families.
And that's just from early Sunday morning.
And so it just probably in the past 24 to 36 hours, they've already raised over $1 million. So we are seeing this kind of resilience out of this tragedy. And we're also seeing a lot of questions, though. There, people wondering kind of the motive. Was this homophobia? Was this terrorism? Many astute people pointing out that they're not mutually exclusive. They could be both. And in fact, in this case, it seems like they are. So, but still those questions lingering. And then we see the presidential candidates weighing in, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump tweeting out, Donald Trump getting in a bit of trouble because he's saying, I called this, or, you know, I appreciate the congratulations saying that I was right on terrorism and domestic terrorism, people saying that was in poor taste. But the one moment I keep seeing shared again and again and again from last night was Lin-Manuel Miranda. Now, this is the creator of the hit musical Hamilton, which is going to take in Broadway and the U.S. by storm. And last night was the Tony Awards, the Theater Awards in New York, and he won an award, and he went up there, and he gave this really moving speech saying that, you know, we all need to be resilient, and he said, love is love is love is love is love. So that was really a nice moment, and a lot of people sharing that video of his speech on social media saying, this is what it's all about. This was a tragedy, and it was horrible. The motive was horrible, but at the end, it's all about love is love is love is love.
It's hard to talk about, isn't it?
It is. It's really, you know, for a lot of people, especially here in the newsroom today, it looks like a lot of people quite hit hard by this, and not just in the newsroom here, really throughout the country.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
In the news, U.S. authorities are pursuing 100 leads in the mass killing at the nightclub. Analysts fear more anti-gay rampages are likely. Pakistan and Afghanistan observe a ceasefire after a deadly border clash. News, feature reports, and more are at voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Common wisdom has long held that mammal species really didn't expand until after the land-roaming dinosaurs became extinct some 66 million years ago. However, a new study suggests that 10 to 20 million years before the dinosaurs disappeared, ancestors of today's mammals had already begun to greatly branch out. The study also points out that the diversity of prehistoric mammals also suffered greatly as the result of the same extinction event that wiped out the dinosaurs. The researchers suggest that one of the reasons why so many believe that these warm-blooded animals were repressed during the age of dinosaurs may be that many of the early mammalian fossils found up until recently didn't really reflect a variation in species. But over recent years, fossils of more mammal species have been found. These have included various dog-sized and hoofed animals that had a variety of teeth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
In the aftermath of the Orlando shooting, Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer sounded defiant when speaking with reporters today.
We will not be defined by the act of a cowardly hater. We will be defined by how we respond, how we treat each other, and this community has already stepped up to do that.
The shooter at the nightclub in Orlando, Florida, was known by authorities and had been checked into by the FBI. Marielle Harris is a senior researcher at the Counter-Extremism Project. She spoke about Omar Mateen with VOA's Chris Hannis.
We know that the shooter, Omar Mateen, pledged allegiance to ISIS in a call to 911. And we know that he was being interviewed by the FBI in both 2013 and 2014. But both cases were closed, ultimately, because the FBI did not deem him a threat. We don't know how much operational support ISIS actually gave to this operation. So we're still looking for clues for that. ISIS did give an official claim of responsibility on its Telegram channel, a mock news agency. So we have that there. So I think it works both ways. The shooter got to act on behalf of a very powerful organization, and ISIS got to claim responsibility for an attack that's taking up all this Western media.
And what do we know about any of his possible motivations?
His father claims that he was set off by seeing a same-sex couple kissing in front of him in Miami. So clearly, I mean, we don't know how much we can trust that. If Omar Mateen pledged allegiance to ISIS, he is clearly, you know, acting on some of the group's motives as well. So he doesn't think that gays should be able to live. He thinks that gays deserve the death sentence. And I mean, we're seeing this in across ISIS in Iraq. We're seeing ISIS's persecution of gay people. So that is definitely among the killer's motives here.
We've seen after, you know, incidents like this, obviously the outpouring support and shock and frustration. What can the public be doing, or how should they be processing, you know, an attack like this? That, you know, while we've seen a lot of, you know, mass shootings in the U.S., there aren't that many, you know, terror attacks, especially compared to other places in the world.
I think we need to realize that this did target the gay community, but that it could really target anyone, because what ISIS does not like is people living not like under ISIS rule, right? So it really could, you know, what we saw in Paris and Brussels, these were just ordinary people at a club. It doesn't matter really if it was a gay club or a regular whatever club. These people are just out enjoying their time, and that's what ISIS wants to do. It wants to sow terror. So again, we don't know how much operational support there was here. It could have just been a lone wolf attack, or, you know, we're waiting for the details to come in. But we need to realize that we it's not just the gay community here. It's not just a certain type of people that are being persecuted or targeted. It can be anybody, and that we all need to kind of show a resilient face to that.
Mariel Harris with the Counter Extremism Project. Coming up on International Edition, a look at government efforts to thwart terrorists, and are gun violence and mental health linked? This latest shooting in Orlando puts a spotlight on what is being done to prevent such possible terrorist attacks. National Security Affairs correspondent Jeff Selden is joining us on the line to talk about that. Jeff, what is the government doing to try to prevent this kind of attack?
Well, this is one of the big concerns that the U.S. government has had ever since the September 11th, 2001 attack. And in fact, you have the creation of a whole department, the Department of Homeland Security, to make sure that the different law enforcement and intelligence agencies within the U.S. were connecting the dots, talking to each other, so that potential terrorists didn't fall through the cracks. By and far, it's been pretty successful, given the number of arrests that have been made, the number of plots that you never hear about come to fruition, because they don't. Still, it's difficult. Even in the case of the Orlando shooting, the attack over the weekend that killed about 50 people, injured almost another 50. The shooter, Omar Mateen, was interviewed at least twice, possibly three times, by the FBI. So it's a very difficult thing. And again, the concern is that, especially with this concept of a lone wolf, somebody who is angry, maybe sympathizes with the views of a terrorist group, they can go online. And Islamic State has really exploited this pretty well, not just in the U.S., but all over, to gain foreign fighters and to inspire attacks, such as in San Bernardino, in Chattanooga, Tennessee. There have been others, Garland, Texas. So they've been able to put material out there that if you're somebody who has these sort of leanings, that material can help push you over the edge and cause you to take action.
I've heard that the cybersecurity policies are pretty good in the United States as far as trying to use social media to track down these organizations and individuals that might be causing trouble.
The cybersecurity has been more and more of a priority. And again, if you talk to intelligence officials, law enforcement officials, the concern isn't so much just negating the technology. You can shut down one avenue to disseminate this stuff on social media, the propaganda that groups like Islamic State use, but they just find another, because there's so much out there. And it's tough to have visibility of everything that's going on, because there are so many forums, there are so many ways, so many accounts that can be created on social media. And so what you hear them talk about, more than just shutting down the message, which is important, is fighting the ideology. And you even hear military officials talk about this, too, as they talk about defeating Islamic State and destroying the self-declared caliphate in Iraq and Syria. They all say it's a matter of fighting the ideology. And they also say that, in part, to fight the ideology, you have to fight the conditions that allow that type of ideology, that type of anger, that type of fear, that all creates the conditions for somebody to embrace terrorist theology. You have to take on those causes. You have to fight that as well. And it's not easy. And again, all it really takes, if somebody is angry enough and they have the means to acquire the weapons, they can go ahead and they can try to conduct an attack. A lot of times with lone wolves, there are people who have not been on the radar. In the case of the Orlando shooting, the Orlando terror attack over the weekend, it seems that what makes it stand out a little bit is that the suspect is somebody who was on the radar, who had been interviewed by the FBI. But even then, it's that fine line of whether there's something actionable that law enforcement can do or whether they're just monitoring somebody and talking to somebody who's had leanings that worry them.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff, for speaking with us today.
Anytime.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Journalists don't know anything definitive about the mental state of Omar Mateen, the Orlando nightclub shooter. But in an interview with The Washington Post, his former wife described him as not a stable person, who she said would just come home and start beating her. Some might link gun violence and mental illness. Correspondent Carol Pearson has been looking into the issue and joins us here in the studio. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you, Susan.
What have you found, Carol?
Well, first of all, every time there's a mass shooting, people talk about mental illness and mental health, and they bring it, was this guy mentally ill? We don't know. And research shows that of people who have diagnosed mental illnesses, and that's, you know, extreme schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and major depressive disorder, that only you would reduce gun violence between 3% and 5% of all gun violence in the U.S., if you took that into account and if these people didn't have access to guns. Now, that doesn't say that this man wasn't mentally ill, because many people with mental illness are undiagnosed. And the other thing is, like, you can have severe diabetes or severe heart disease. You can have severe mental illness, or you might have a milder form that's treatable, and you can go on and function like a normal human being with medication or with talk therapy or a combination of the two.
Does the media help perpetuate the link between gun violence and mental stability?
They do, and that's what a study at Johns Hopkins showed. They were looking at the fact that whenever there's a shooting or something like that, the question comes up, was this person mentally ill? And even our leaders, political leaders, bring that up when they talk about it. And it doesn't help reduce the stigma against mental illness, and it doesn't help people feel better about getting treated for it, especially when they do studies and find that it's only a small percentage of gun violence being committed by people with mental illness.
Do they really know what causes gun violence?
Actually, probably not. This has never been studied. In fact, the U.S. Congress forbade U.S. agencies, the National Institutes of Health and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, from studying this. They took away any funding. The CDC does keep a record of deaths, because they have, that's how they find out how many people died of this disease or that disease. They also know how many people died of gun violence, but they don't look into it any more than that. What they need to do, and I spoke to the director of the American Association of Public Health, and he said, you know, when we have car accidents and deaths related to car accidents, we study it. We find out that seatbelts really help prevent deaths. We find out that airbags really help prevent deaths. We have crash factors now with these automobiles, so we know which cars are safer and which are not. Nothing like that has been done with gun violence. So, you know, a lot of what they say is conjecture. There are some areas that study this, Johns Hopkins and Harvard University, for example, and there are other places too, but there is no public funding behind this and no real swell of grants and the things that people need in order to come up with some conclusions about how do you prevent these deaths.
Well, thank you very much, Carol, for speaking with us.
You're welcome.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since Russia's invasion of Crimea and then eastern Ukraine, it has become clear that Russia is unwilling to abide by international law or live by the rules of the institutions that Russia joined at the end of the Cold War, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Nuland. To counter the threat posed by Russia's aggression and deter any military moves against NATO territory, the United States and its NATO allies have maintained a military presence on land, sea, and air along NATO's eastern edge in Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, and the three Baltic states. All 28 allies have participated in exercises, training sessions, and patrols throughout Europe supported by the U.S. To press Moscow to bring an end to the violence in Ukraine and fully implement its commitments under the Minsk agreements, the United States has worked with the European Union, the G7, and other like-minded nations to impose successive rounds of tough economic sanctions on Russia over the past 2 years. These sanctions, combined with low oil prices and Russia's continued structural weaknesses, have imposed significant costs. The United States is working to increase the resilience of countries across Europe that face pressure from Russia. To help Ukraine better monitor and secure its borders, deploy its forces more effectively, and defend its sovereignty and territorial integrity, the United States has committed over $600 million in non-lethal security assistance. The United States is also helping countries in Eastern Europe and Eurasia to strengthen their democratic institutions, reform their economies, and fight corruption. Energy diversification remains a key component in protecting vulnerable countries over dependence on Russian energy. At the same time, the U.S. will continue to look for ways to work with Russia in areas of common interest, including nonproliferation, nuclear security, and counterterrorism. Finally, the United States will continue to engage directly with those Russian businesses and individuals who share American interests and values. And the United States will continue to speak out against laws and policies that impede the work of Russian civil society and violate the fundamental rights of freedom of expression, assembly, and association in Russia and elsewhere in the region. The United States will continue to strongly support its NATO allies while promoting freedom and democracy throughout Europe and Eurasia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.